Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gib.
We're going to start with a couple emails from you, our listeners, all around the world. This first one is in reference to something we talked about last week at the end of the show. And I mentioned at one point that that I was concerned that my grandpa is at a point after his wife passed away, my grandma, that at the very least you could say he's ready to go, and that possibly he may be having suicidal thoughts. And the email reads, on the topic of suicide in elderly men, my father was one of those who made that choice, was depressed, and had been unsuccessfully treated. Drug therapies have side effects that can be intolerable. Taking therapies when people face declining health, loss of friends, and purpose are not that effective. Don't feel embarrassed asking your grandpa about his thoughts about ending his life. If he is, he will not be feeling embarrassed about it. People that age are usually pretty practical. You may be uncomfortable, but there's nothing embarrassing about loving someone enough to ask about their mental well-being. There are no easy answers. If he is, however, all that is better than losing someone and wishing you had tried to help, but let fear or embarrassment stop you. Be brave. You already are in so many ways. Sue, thank you for that email of understanding and encouragement and sharing your story.
Which... Yeah, there were a lot of emails that people liked that topic. Here's one from Cindy. My parents were married for over 60 years, and like you, so this clearly referring to you and what you mentioned about your grandpa, we lost my mother. My father was a very proud man and never cried physically in front of us until we lost my mother. And then she goes on and says, I moved home 3 years after my mother's passing as his health steadily declined. We had another 3 years, but he succumbed to health issues, but also the depression of losing my mother. It seems he lost his purpose and happiness when we lost her. My dad was 88. That was the alarming thing about that topic last week, was that old people, they had the highest risk of successfully committing suicide, and it appears that the least is being done to help them, or the least amount of research resources is available to
at the very least online. The world has shifted and become so digital, and we take that for granted that it's equally accessible to everyone, and for certain groups of people who are basically conducting the same sorts of internet searches that you or I would be. They're just not able to go to get the same results or to go through them in the same way. Very important topic. Thank you, everyone, for all of your emails. Also, the continued outpouring of congratulations on our or happy birthdays.
Should I read one quick one?
Maybe a line. I have a tough time. I have to say, I have a tough time hearing so much nice stuff about me and you and us.
Yeah.
Let us indulge.
Okay, come on, some self-indulgence.
That's the word.
From Sandra, for so long, I've wanted to send you a, quote, love letter. Finally, here goes. I don't think we've ever gotten anything from Sandra before. Okay, I love the show and especially the interaction of you two. Rarely have I heard anything like it. Let me say that both you, Connor, and you, Gabe, are delightful together and separately. Your interest in and ability to present science in such a refreshing way is very, very much appreciated. Thank you and congratulations.
That's very, very warming. It gives me a warm... I can feel it. I can feel it right now.
DW. Made for minds.
Are you going to start or am I going to start?
Yeah, I'm going to start.
Okay.
I've got something that I think a lot of people can identify with, although this first part, not necessarily. So to set the scene, I'm just going to play a little bit of music that it's very similar to what I hear every other morning, every couple of mornings, when after I walk my son to elementary school, I take a turn, pick up like a bread roll from the bakery, get that done. And then there's usually something from this local supermarket. It's a small one. And I walk in there to pick something up. And at like 7:45 in the morning, it's blasting this kind of music, which is Schlager music, German music.
You know how I feel about Schlagermusik, right?
How do you?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's Germany's version, I would say. I hate to generalize here, but it's Germany's version of country music.
Yeah.
It's musically, harmoniously, and rhythmically very simple. Lyrically, incredibly simple.
Same themes.
Cliché one after another. I love it.
But it feels good. It
puts love
you,
it.
Yeah, you and I, the mics were off for a second.
Oh, we were
bouncing
we were
in our
jiving
chairs.
Here.
Okay,
yeah.
So the only thing I have to say here is that is a great feeling. And it that's part of the reason I like going to that supermarket, even to buy one little thing, like a little thing of margarine.
Just a little shot of Schlager?
Yeah, it is. For me, it's a little hit. At the same time, something else is happening in that supermarket. There are a couple of employees. They have maybe a grand total of 4 employees. That's how small this thing is. And one of them, she's a woman who's maybe a couple years younger than us, rewind a year or two ago, and she was really smiley and friendly, and something has changed, and she's not anymore. Things aren't going well for her, I think. I would never say that to her because I don't know her. You can't start a conversation like that with a cashier.
What is it?
It may be connected to the music. That's what I thought of when I saw this study from Ohio State University.
Okay.
And that's kind of like a long rambling introduction to this study, but that's why it caught my attention. It's in the Journal of Applied Psychology. It's called In Sync or Out of Tune, The Effects of Workplace Music Misfit on Employees. So what the study did...
She probably doesn't like the Schlager.
Well, I have to, and
is subjected to it on a daily basis, and it's killing her.
40 hours a week. I have thought this plenty of times walking in there that I like a good little quick hit of this music.
Yeah,
it's like an injection of good feelings, and then you walk out. But if it's 8 hours straight every day,
it's an important thing to say about Schlager music. Is my feelings about it are probably pretty rare. Most Germans don't like...
No, I would correct you. Most Germans our age don't like
it. Our age, yeah.
Yeah, most like go from age 50 to 60 to 70 to 80 and that...
They love it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but our age, it's not cool.
And ask a younger German, like a 20-year-old, they're going to probably hate it.
So music study, there were 2 studies in one. I'll just get through them real quickly. One of them had like 150 people in it and they were not actually at the workplace. So they said, okay, fill out what kind of music you like. And really, they looked at volume, emotional intensity, speed, and complexity. Hmm. And then they had them do some tasks and put 1 of 2 playlists on their ears. One of them matched what they liked, the other didn't. Surprise, surprise. If it was not a match, there was an increase in unpleasant emotions, feelings, and a sense of exhaustion kind of set in them.
Hmm.
It has a real effect on you if the music you like isn't what you are being bombarded with. This, though, was just, they were doing creative tests. They weren't really working. So experiment 2, or part 2, was to take it into the actual workplace. And here they had people in healthcare, in retail, people who worked in dining and restaurants, 3 times a day fill out emails asking them, hey, wherever you are, when you're working, there's music, does it line up with you? And what they found there was very similar, except specifically on those days, they were more likely to engage in actions that hurt the company.
Oh, wow. Straight up, take revenge.
Yeah. And to do fewer positive things when they were out of sync with the music. Now, the reason Kathleen Keeler, she's the investigator behind this, that she's looking into this, she's an assistant professor of management and human resources. So it's kind of the business angle of this.
Yeah.
How do you make employees happy so that they don't intentionally harm the company because they're so angry at this bad music? And the
find music that everybody likes?
Can you do that though?
Like elevator Muzak? What is that called?
That stuff
that kind of just blends into the background? You don't even realize it's even there almost?
She had 3 suggestions and 2 of them were evidence-based. The other one she's just kind of speculating. One was try to strike a balance. And what I was thinking of there is, for example, you hear about this a lot during Christmas time, that employees who have to hear Christmas music nonstop, they get so sick of, for example, All I Want for Christmas is You by Mariah Carey. That's the most famous example.
Yeah.
But perhaps you could stick to the Christmas music because it does make people happy, but do a mixture of playlists with different kinds of Christmas. Mix it up. That would be one thing. Create places, make sure there are places at the workplace where they can escape that sound or those sounds and or provide headphones or
Christmas music free zones or something.
Yeah. Like my ear pods or when you slide them in, you can activate them so that they noise cancel everything until I talk.
Great.
And then that way you don't lose the conversations that you need. And then her suggestion, which is based on no evidence, is she's just like, look, if it's possible, let them listen to their own music. Why not? Right. That they're going to listen to what they what they like, usually. They're not going to listen to what they hate. And then I'm going to jump on to Kathleen Keeler's three suggestions and add a fourth and say, why not, instead of just saying music, include podcasts, like the Science Unscripted podcast.
Have it running all day long, just on repeat?
Yes, at the supermarket or whatever. So maybe they'll like, no, where, that they can personally listen to it.
Where it ruins people's moods, makes them physiologically unwell, and they're taking revenge on the whole world
because
of
us. Yeah. No, if you like if that would help you work better throughout the day, then you should be allowed to do it.
All right, what do we got here? I'm going to give you five questions. Connor, are you ready for this?
I am ready for this because you alerted me to the fact that it's about whether or not I can...
These are headlines, or maybe they're not headlines.
Yeah.
You are to tell me if the headline that I'm going to read you five of them, you're going to tell me if this headline is real or fake. Mm-hmm. United Nations gets mostly positive marks from people around the world.
True.
Study. Left-wingers are more likely to lie to get a higher salary.
False.
Hyatt will remove small bottles from hotel bathrooms.
False.
Most Americans...
Oh, wait, sorry, no. From bathrooms. Yeah, you got to get those small bottles. If they're made of glass, get those out of the bathrooms. True.
Most Americans say it's okay for professional athletes to speak out publicly about politics.
Most Americans say that it's okay for professional athletes to make public statements on politics. I'm not sure that's true. I think that's false.
The government is conducting a massive cover-up of their involvement. The government is conducting a massive cover-up of their involvement in 9/11.
No, that's not true. That's not a real article. That's a false statement.
Okay, so you out there, I hope whoever was listening to this also gave their answers. Here come the results. Connor, you got one wrong. So the United Nations gets mostly positive marks from people around the world was real. That was a real headline.
Yeah.
New study, left-wingers are more likely to get a higher salary. That was fake. Hyatt will remove small bottles from hotel bathrooms. That was real. That was real. You were right. Most Americans say it's okay for professional athletes to speak out publicly about politics. That was real.
True. Okay, I got that one wrong.
Yeah. The government is conducting a massive cover-up of their involvement in 9/11. That's false.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was the point of this study? 66,000 people took this online survey. It was put out by Cambridge and the University of British Columbia to see what groups of people are susceptible to misinformation.
And specifically misinformation from just catching a headline.
Just headlines. That's important. So it's not you're reading an entire article and based on that text, you're saying whether it's true or not. It's just a headline.
I was just going to say it's really important, maybe more important than ever before, because how I
consume or read the news, because there's so much of it now.
What? Hold on.
You have to skim through the headlines to get a sense. You can't.
Yeah, I was just going to say that is not how you read the news when you actually read the news. I know you, but I hear what you're saying. We see so many more headlines on a daily basis than in the years where I used to have newspapers drop on my doorstep.
Yes.
And that was different. You had a set number, and that was the number of headlines that you chose to consume. Now they keep on coming.
It seemed like back then because less was happening. These days, there might be more happening, but there's just so many more stories written about it. You read so many headlines on a daily basis.
You have access to all of them, and they have access to you.
And a lot of those headlines that you see online are not real. Some of them are fake. And there are groups of people who are better at seeing the fakeness.
Who are they?
I'll tell you the ones who are not doing well. Gen Z.
Oh, no.
Okay, first of all, Gen Z means you are at right now between the age of 13 and 28. Mm-hmm. So you're born up until 2012. They did the worst of the four different age demographics. So they looked at Gen Z, millennials, who right now are between the ages of 29 and 44, Gen X, 45 to 60, and boomers, 61 and up. Mm-hmm. Gen X did the best. Boomers did second best. Millennials did third best. And significantly worse than all those other three were Gen Z.
So I have a theory, and I'm hearing about this for the first time, so this is off the cuff.
Okay.
I think an important criteria or to understand who can and who cannot say a headline is more likely to be true or false is connected to age and nothing else. Not I'm not talking about general
experience or what?
Well, when I think to take the first one, United Nations largely approved by a majority of people.
Yeah.
I think if you're living in a certain country and you're young and you've only been exposed to kind of that country's media for most of your life, or you have, let's just say the younger you are, the more narrow and probably the less worldly your view is, just by default, I would think. And so that statement might, to a young person, seem to be false, or maybe you're cynical. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whereas to an older person, if you actually have an idea or a sense of the 8 billion people living on this planet and what the United Nations has done for so many billions of them, it would change. That was the quick little algorithm I had to figure out if that was true.
Yeah.
And that's based on my age. That's not me being smart. I think
you've seen more.
Yes.
You've seen more. You've been around the block.
Yeah.
As they say, therefore, you know what's fake and what's not. The next one was gender. So male, female, and non-binary. This is close, a little bit closer than before, because the Gen Z was significantly worse than the other three groups. Female and non-binary were not as good as males. So the test comprised 20 questions. Males had an average score of 17.69. Females, 17.25, non-binary, 17.18. That looks very, very small, but statistically that is significant, that difference. So males were better than non-males.
Okay.
Moving on, education played a real role here. So they looked at five different groups, going from postdoc degree after college all the way down to no high school diploma. The less education you had, the worse you were at this test. Mm-hmm. And it went right down the list. And interestingly, political orientation also. The more liberal you were, so it went from extremely liberal all the way to extremely conservative, and right down the line, the more liberal you were, the better you were at assessing the veracity.
Liberal in the American sense of that word. Is this an American
political
study?
Leaning.
Yeah.
All over the world. All over the world. 66,000 people were invited to take the test from all over the world.
Yeah.
And they organized it based on the groups that I just talked through. So age, gender, education, and political orientation. Gen Z was worse. Non-males were worse. Less educated, worse. And more conservative, worse.
Okay.
Or not as good at assessing the veracity of political headlines. But most interestingly, at the end, there was one question at the end. How do you think you did? And interestingly, Gen Z and non-males were the best at predicting what their score would be. So even if they weren't as good at assessing the veracity of these headlines, they were self-aware.
Well, that's really important.
Isn't that?
Because even,
I found that really
actually
cool.
Now that you say that, it's not really all that important whether or not, whether or not you're
isn't
good at
cool?
it.
Isn't that
cool? Yeah, because if you know you're not good at it, then you're not going to nest, even if you're like, I think that's true, but it's actually false, or the other way around.
Then you're
going
to second guess yourself and possibly work to improve at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, there you go. I mean, kind of knocked on Gen Z at the beginning and now you're back.
And in the end, they're
now
right.
You're back again. We are out of time, unfortunately. So I won't talk about this study, but if any of you want to see some really interesting urinal innovations, shape and size, like the cornucopia urinal or the Nautilus.
You're holding up an image to me right now, and the ones on the left are pretty normal.
Yeah.
On the right, that's way too narrow.
That's the
how could I hit that?
That's the Nautilus. Yeah.
The Nautilus?
Yeah.
How would I hit that?
It's a good question. If you do, way less spray. These are urinals that can save, I guess, the Earth or the world from at least 1 million liters of urine per year that splatter all over the floor. That is a study that you can look into if you want to. The title of that one splash-free urinals for global sustainability and accessibility, designed through physics and differential equations, with obviously some knock-on effects on some of the diseases that can be transferred via urine.
Let me also get the title of the misinformation study called Profiling Misinformation Susceptibility in the Journal of Personality and Individual Differences. You guys want to look that one up?
Are you a liar?
Not have you ever told a lie. Are you a liar?
And importantly, if so, what are the circumstances where you do it? And I would ask you to look deep within yourself into the darkest recesses of yourself to think not about the good white lies, those are important, but the bad ones, the things you lie about that are just not good. That's what we're here to talk about today.
Science Unscripted.
Yeah, hi. My name is Isabel. I'm a researcher at the Max Planck Institute for the Study of Crime, Security and Law in Freiburg. I'm a psychologist by training, and I've recently conducted research on lying behavior.
What is the primary conclusion that your study shows with regard to people out there who lie?
So the primary conclusion is that lying is much more consistent across contexts than we originally thought. Most people are actually pretty stable in their behavior.
Once a liar, always a liar? Is that what you're saying?
Well, somehow, yes. Then again, I mean, that might be oversimplified, of course, as always is always the case. It's more complex. But definitely, people have a certain tendency to lie. So someone who lies in one context will more likely also be willing to lie in a similar context in the future than someone who is honest.
Let's get right into the experiment. How did you figure out who was lying and when and in what context?
So actually, we cannot tell for each single individual whether they did lie. But what we do know is that, for example, when we tell people that they should toss a coin, and if they toss heads, they will receive 5 euro. Then we know that there is a 50% chance of winning the 5 euro honestly. But if there is 80% of people telling us that they had heads, well, this is very unlikely. So we can know that there must be some people who did lie. And this sort of experiment we did over and over again, and we saw that some people consistently reported that they won, even though the likelihood for this pattern of behavior is very, very low.
Could one of the conclusions of this work be that lying is a kind of personality trait then? Some people just have it in their personality DNA, so to speak?
Well, whether it's in the personality DNA might be a different question. But definitely what we do know and what our experiment shows is that lying has a personality basis. So there is something that's dispositional about lying. And that's also why we can say for sure that people have this stable tendency to lie, and it is somehow ingrained in their personality.
If you're sitting at a table with a group of strangers, group of people, 8 people you've just met for the first time, what is a cue that you would take based on your research that one person at the table is probably not trustworthy?
So there is nothing physical that I would use as a cue, because there is no such physical cue that you can use to infer lying. But what we do know is that if we have observed that this person lied in the past in similar situations, the likelihood that this person will lie in the future, also in a similar context, is pretty high, or at least higher than for someone who was honest in these contexts before.
Are you a liar, Isabel?
Of course I am. Everyone is a liar, but definitely to different degrees, right? And here we measured lying that was purely selfish. There are so many different types of lies, also, for example, to protect others. We call that white lies. And so I think everyone who would claim that they have never lied is a liar.
Why investigate lying? What was your interest?
I just find it intriguing. I'm more of the person who thinks that most people are honest. So I'm very optimistic, actually. And that's, by the way, something we do also see in our experiments. The majority of people is honest. And that's, I think, the good thing to also know. It's not that most people lie. There is actually hope, so to say. And people are pretty ethical, even though they might just lie and get away with it.
And why does the phenomenon of lying intrigue you so much?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'm just fascinated by why someone, because I try to be honest, but then again, sometimes it also happens, as I said, that I'm lying. So I think research is always a little bit of me search. So maybe it's just trying to understand why there is these individual differences, why for some people it's actually so easy to lie, and for others it's so difficult because they feel guilty. So maybe it's just, and also because lying and in general people's morality, it's so important for their identity. They always want to feel as good people, as honest people, but then again they lie. So how can we explain this controversy, this paradox? That's what I don't know, try to understand a bit better.
And that was Dr. Isabel Thielmann. She's a research group leader in the Department of Criminology and really focuses on personalities, like human personality and what leads to certain behaviors.
At the Max Planck Institute down in Freiburg, Germany. That's in the Schwarzwald. My favorite part.
The Black Forest.
Of this country, the Black Forest.
Some of you might have
huge.
Eaten. Yeah, and some of you might have eaten Black Forest ham. It's a smoked meat, very smoky flavor.
Yeah.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, they have, it's not in big mountains by any stretch of the imagination, but those hills, the undulation, they're covered in pine trees.
Are we going to talk about what she just informed us all about, or are we going to talk about pine trees, buddy?
I was trying to avoid having to talk about lying. She got close to that. She didn't say the word, that dissonance. When you know something about yourself that you are but do not want to be. You lie, but you know it's wrong, but you still do it. I know firsthand experience what that feels like, and I hate it.
We chatted a bit with her on the back end, and she was getting at the idea that we all have some sort of helpful tool inside of us to get rid of that dissonance, to allow ourselves to believe or to tell ourselves that despite that, we are a good person. And I would say, you're talking about yourself lying here, and I would say you're a good person. You can also lie sometimes and be a good person. You can be a...
Thank you, Connor.
Bad person and lie sometimes too. But
there are different reasons for lying, obviously. Selfish, selfish lying is not as good as, I don't know, lying to help other people.
Well, come on.
Hugely different.
I've seen some questionable haircuts in the past. I don't say that to that person.
Yeah.
You say that's a beautiful haircut on your head, right? You don't, that's the kind of white lie she's talking about.
Yeah.
There are far more damaging lies. I think everyone's familiar with that. People have been on the receiving end or even done it. And that's kind of, we don't do it this way usually very often, but if you're willing to go there, I'd love to hear about your ugliest lie. And I don't expect you to email us that with your real email address. There are, if you search for temporary email address, people usually set those up when they're signing up for something and they don't want spam.
Yep.
Temporary email address. And then you send that message to su@dw.com, and maybe you tell us about the worst lie that you ever said or did.
It's possibly a normal, it's just a part of being human. We lie.
And that's
tell us about yours.
Yeah. It's okay.
Right?
su@dw.com.
Science. I came home late and to my surprise, all my worldly things were aside. She had enough this time. Maybe I shouldn't have lied. I thought I could put one over on her. I thought I was way too sly. But when she put that X-ray vision on me, I just broke down and cried. I shouldn't have lied. I shouldn't have. I shouldn't have lied.
DW, made for minds.